Hi there, I'm Natalie Silverstein. I'm an author, a speaker, a mom of two teens and one emerging adult, and a passionate advocate for family and youth service. While I was researching my second book, Simple Acts, The Busy Teen's Guide to Making a Difference, I learned about so many big-hearted tweens and teens who are volunteering, fundraising, starting nonprofits, and becoming social entrepreneurs and activists. I wanted to hear their stories, and I wanted to celebrate them and share them with the world so that everyone can be as inspired as I am. I hope that after listening to these short episodes, you'll go out into your community and share your light, your talents, gifts, and strengths to help others. Because the truth is, every person can make a big impact, one simple act at a time. I'm really proud to share today's episode with you all. My guest, Michael, is a graduate of the University of Michigan, and he's now a medical school student. He reminds us all about a shameful event that occurred in Flint, Michigan nearly 10 years ago when the town's water supply became dangerously contaminated with lead, and it took the government a really long time to acknowledge and correct the problem. Michael went to Michigan believing that he would join a group of students that was already working to help their neighbors in Flint, and alas, he found that nobody was doing the work. So he and some friends came together, and they worked with a mentor at the university to launch the Flint Justice Partnership. I hope you'll listen, remember, and learn something new today, and share this story with others. So welcome back, everybody. I'm excited to introduce you to Michael, who is a medical school student. I mean, that's kind of a big deal. And he's a little bit older than our typical guest.
Hi, everyone. My name is Michael. It's so great to be here today.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, where you went to school, where you go to school now, and then tell us all about the project, kind of start all the way from the beginning.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. So I grew up in New York. Both of my parents immigrated here from Poland, and a lot of that really inspired me throughout life to pursue work of working with people in communities that don't look like mine. And so growing up in New York and seeing some of the inequities that my neighbors had and just a lot of the discrimination that some of my peers faced was really eye-opening. And so when I went to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor for undergrad, I started looking around at what could I do to really make an impact on other people's lives. And before going to college, I had been involved in some research on the Flint water crisis. A group of high schoolers and I, we did some research in regards to ways we could use chemistry to help clean the water in Flint. And that was an amazing experience just to see how we could use science to make a positive change in the world. But my goal was really to connect more with the residents. In high school, I never really got the opportunity to do that. And so when I got to college, I was kind of looking around, seeing if anyone was out there doing work with Flint. Flint is only about an hour away, hour and a half away from Ann Arbor. And we even have a campus there. There's another University of Michigan in Flint. And so I came into school thinking there were a ton of people doing work in Flint. And so I got there, had a couple of friends, and we checked the student org website. We checked all the sites out there, and we couldn't find anything, nothing. There was nothing out there, nothing at all. And so we had an amazing mentor at a program called the Michigan Community Scholars Program. His name was David Shome, and he was so kind and so welcoming to us. He helped us start our project, which is called Flint Justice Partnership. And that's where we all started. Yeah.
Wow. And so tell us a little bit more. Remind everybody, because I think it's important that, I think this is true for a lot of big stories that hit the media with a big splash, and everybody's talking about it, and it's on the cover of every magazine, and it's in the news every evening and on 60 Minutes. And then the problem persists, and it sort of quietly goes away in the media. So remind us all exactly what happened in Flint, and when it started, and sort of the cause of it, if you can sort of summarize that. I know it's a big, big problem with a lot of probably different issues that were impacting it, but remind us what happened there and what continues to go on so everyone is reminded that this is still a problem.
Yeah, and you're so right about that. The news cycle just goes on and people forget. But to give everyone some background, the Flint water crisis began in 2014, and it really began when the city of Flint switched its water source from Lake Huron and the Detroit River to a less costly option, to the Flint River. And after this move, there were a lot of different issues with how the water was treated, and eventually the water treatment and management was so bad that the lead pipes that were bringing all this drinking water into people's homes, they started leaching all the lead in those pipes into the drinking water. And when people were turning on their faucets, they would see brown water. And you obviously can't really see lead with your own eyes because it's so, so small, yet so toxic for young kids. But the residents started noticing it. They started speaking out, and no one did anything about it. No one did anything. And to give everyone some background, just on the city in general, Flint used to be known as one of the major hubs for General Motors. And they still do have a factory there, but used to be a huge hub of, in a very lively town of just people working in the industry. It's since kind of, lost some of that investment that those companies really worked on in years past. Now Flint is a majority black community, and a lot of people point to that as one of the contributing factors for why residents were treated like this. It was a lot of systemic injustice and racism, and it wasn't until over a year later that Michigan authorities and the city itself recognized that there was lead in the water. It took that long for them to even say, hey guys, you should stop drinking this water, even though all of you have seen how just discolored it was. And so it took that long for people to realize that. And then, as you said, that's when all that news came out.
Right. I think the president visited, right? President Obama. I want to point out that's how long ago it was. We're talking almost 10 years now that this crisis started. And it is, you know, outrageous. This was a town, as you pointed out, that was economically sort of on the downturn because so much manufacturing had left the town. But there were people still living there, right? And raising their families. And to turn on the water pipe and try and put water into a glass and see that it's brown, and to not have anyone in the town acknowledge that this is not safe for you and your family to drink is really outrageous. And again, there are so many different layers of the systemic racism and all of the other things that played into this problem. But the fact that it took that long for the government to get involved, and then I think it actually took much longer for them to come up with some reasonable resolution. As a medical student, can you just tell us what that led that was in the drinking water for all of the children that were impacted here, what that potentially did to them over the course of months and years that they were drinking and using this water for washing and for cooking? What's the impact on the kids that were being raised during this time?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's a lot of people still trying to figure it out. An amazing researcher, Dr. Mona Hanna-Tisha, she's written a book about the water crisis. She's been looking into this issue, but overall, no one has really been able to say that the Flint water crisis caused any specific disease. But we did see a huge outbreak of Legionnaires' disease, which was caused by some of the water mismanagement. So there was a big spike in that. There was also a big spike in just the amount of kids who were diagnosed with ADHD and different sorts of disorders. So now there's issues with, you know, kids not having enough resources at schools and not having the special classes that they need to succeed. And then also there was some research that came out a couple years ago from Yale that found women who gave birth and were affected by the water crisis, they found that their children had lower birth weights. And that has a lot of implications. But in general, I think the main takeaway is any amount of lead is toxic to a young developing brain. Any amount, even the tiniest amount will affect kids in devastating ways. And just to touch back on the amount of time that residents had to wait, I mean, they were being gaslighted. The residents were telling the authorities that, look, we have brown water. Like, we can see it with our eyes. Yet the authorities were telling them, oh, it's safe to drink. Everything's fine. Yet the authorities did know about it. The EPA knew about it, but they were hiding that information from them. So a lot of mistrust still remains to this day in the community.
Understandably, it's outrageous. And tell us specifically what the Flint Justice Partnership is doing, both in terms of, is it still ongoing at the University of Michigan? So you went through and graduated and moved on to medical school, but is it still a vibrant club? And what was the work that you were doing in the community? Were you going door to door and bringing water and bringing filtration systems or educating folks? Or what was it that you recruited? I would assume you got other students involved. And what was it that you guys did?
Yeah, it was a little bit of everything. So one of our goals on campus was to educate kids about the Flint water crisis. We have a pretty diverse group of people at Michigan. We have some people who are from Michigan, others who aren't. It's about 50-50 with in-state kids and out-of-state kids. So some of the out-of-state kids were aware of the water crisis, but they weren't maybe necessarily aware that it was still ongoing and still affecting people when we were in college. And so a lot of our work was bringing in speakers who were advocates for residents in Flint, and doing a lot of just outreach on campus and making sure the word was out there. This is a issue affecting a community that's so, so close to us. And then the other aspect of our work was working with a community partner called Crossing Water. And they actually focused on a really unique subset group of people in Flint. And that was the homebound residents, the elderly, people who maybe couldn't go out to get fresh water, bottled water, some of those filter cartridges that you mentioned. And so what we would do is we would come there about once a month, I'd say, and we would bring a car over, drive over to Flint. We would pack our car up to the brink with bottles of water, with water filters, with books. A lot of children in Flint have literary issues as well. And so making sure that we could intervene early on and provide resources was important. And we would drive around to our community partners.
It's just, this is just another great example of where, you know, a group of motivated people, young people in this case, just boots on the ground, going out and knocking on doors, can save lives and to, you know, impact people's lives in a real meaningful way that the government, you know, simply couldn't do. Is the University Club still active today, do you think?
Yeah, they're still active. And, you know, I think the toughest thing is finding someone who could take over, right? And we found an amazing group of people who took over. So we're so glad that they're still working.
Yep. And hopefully the whole goal of this group is to put yourselves out of business, right? I mean, isn't that the hope would be that the government would do something to ensure that the water was safe for the folks in Flint and that you would no longer need to advocate on their behalf. I'm curious, too, about the university. You know, there's this whole sort of town gown idea, right, where this big university takes up so much space and energy in a state and in an area. And it's funny to me, or a little sad, that the University of Michigan itself wasn't saying, wow, our neighbors, we have a responsibility as a member of this community to reach out to the folks in Flint and do something about this problem. Did you work with the administration at all in that way?
Yeah, that's a great point. We also were kind of like, hey, what are you guys doing to work towards just a better life for everyone in Michigan? And I think it's better now. You'll see a lot of researchers at the university who are doing work towards understanding what the impacts of this crisis were on the residents. And they're taking that work back to the residents and sharing that information with them, which is great. We also partnered with a organization on campus that helped us really garner a lot more support from administration, which was great. And they're called the Center for Social Solutions, an amazing group of people that really helped us guide through the whole bureaucracy that is a university. And I think lastly, the most important thing was when we went out into the community, we just saw how resilient those residents of Flint were. They were so, so resilient, but also so kind to each other. They would literally take the bottled water that we would bring them, take it across to the other home and give it to their neighbors. So they would be sharing these resources. Even though they really, really needed this bottled water, they'd give it away to their neighbors. And so just seeing that in action was amazing. And it was an honor just to be around them and get to hear their stories. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And I think that's true over and over again, right? Is that communities take care of each other, neighbors take care of neighbors. And unfortunately, you can only count on yourself and your neighbor. You can't really count on this big university that's an hour away or this government, sadly, to come in and do the right thing. So, well, I want to thank you for the work that you and your, you know, classmates started doing. I wish you didn't have to do it. I wish that the, where are the grownups, right? I wish that it had already been resolved by the time you got to Michigan, which was several years after the crisis had started. What kind of medicine are you going to study? Do you know yet what you'd like to do with your career?
Yeah, I've been feeling it out still, but I think I might want to work with kids. I love their energy. I love how happy they are all the time. And I think it'd be an honor to work with them. So we'll see what happens, but that's where my head's at right now.
Awesome. Well, Michael, we're wishing you the best of luck. Thank you so much for sharing this story with us. I really think it's important to remind everybody that this happened, that this can happen in our country, sadly, and that there is something that a regular person can do and a group of people can do to make a difference. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. Is there any kind of social media for this group? But it seems like kind of it's really central to just the university. Is there a Flint Justice Partnership social media or anywhere that people can learn more?
Yeah, sure. It's UMICHFJP. And you can find us on all the platforms. Yep. UMICHFJP.
UMICHFJP. Awesome. Well, that will be in the show notes. Michael, thank you so much. We are wishing you the best of luck in medical school and beyond. I think you're going to make just a tremendous difference in the world. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure to talk to you about my passion.
Thanks so much for listening. If you were inspired by what you heard today, please follow, rate, and review. These things really matter. And if you know a tween or a teen who is doing great things in his, her, or their community, send them my way. I'd love to meet them and share their stories with a world that could really use a dose of inspiration right about now. You can get in touch with me through my website, simpleactsguide.com. Until next time, remember to keep eyes, ears, hearts, and minds open to the needs of others, and always be kind.